All right, John, the last time we talked was right after the draft and before free agency began. So we have much to discuss here. And where I want to begin is with the news that the Atlanta Hawks have acquired Bogdan Bogdanovic. The Kings decided not to match. And so I haven't really had a chance to talk about that too much. And the Hawks are, of course, your hometown team. So what aspect of that do you want to hit on first?
I think one of the things that's important for people to realize is that it's not just the acquisition here, it's the fact that the Hawks are replacing such shitty players from a year ago with average to good players. And you really see this, the part everyone forgets about, they traded for Clint Capella. He didn't play a game for him. So that takes like the worst center position in the league from last year and makes it probably league average or above this year. And then you're doing the same thing on the perimeter where you go from Vince Carter as your backup four to Danilo Gallinari, and he's probably going to play a lot of minutes across multiple positions too.
Backup four? You think Gallo is not even going to start, huh?
What they seem to be saying right now is that Gallinari will come off the bench behind Collins. And I'm interested to see how this works in practice, because I agree, you do not play Gallinari at the three, right? Like, you already have Trey Young.
No,
like,
you don't.
So I'm on board with that part.
I think they are going to try it, though. Like, I think it'll fail, but I think they are going to try it. I mean, I guess if you get to the point where, like, if DeAndre Hunter and Cam Reddish are playing the way they played a year ago offensively, that maybe Gallo at the three is still your best option.
Well, I mean, if you look at the roster they have now, DeAndre Hunter, like, might not play. Like, legitimately might be, like, the 11th man. Because I think Reddish had kind of moved ahead of him by the time the season stopped. And then you look, like, Herter's still there. He's actually useful and is going to play. Chris Dunn is the backup two. Gallinari, Okongwu's got to play. Rondo's the backup one. Hunter's your 11th man at that point.
Yeah, really. They've got a lot of guys on this team. And that's where my biggest concern comes from. I mean, let's talk first about just like how good they are. But I also then want to shift to just like how it's going to be so weird from an emotional standpoint for this team.
Yeah, sure. So certainly they are the 8th best team in the East. I think that's pretty clear. Can they get to a level above that? And because there's 7, I think, legitimately pretty good teams in the East this year, right? When you look at Milwaukee, Toronto, Boston, Indiana, Miami, Philly, and Brooklyn. And so Atlanta, I think, is definitely 8. Are there teams in that first 7 that they can get ahead of? Could they move ahead of Indiana, maybe? Will Toronto take a step back this year? Could they move ahead of them? You know, getting into the top 5. I'm still maybe a little dodgy on that. I just don't know if they're going to be good enough defensively to really kind of get in that tier.
I might know whether they're going to be good enough defensively. Sorry, I love making that joke. Whenever people say, I don't know if, like, you know, some bad thing is going to happen, I'm like, oh, no, I think I know. But I mean, they could be a wonderful offensive team, I think.
Yeah.
I think Bogdanovic has long been underrated, although given the contract that he got, perhaps not in the end. And I'm just, this is definitely one of those ones where you're wondering if there are enough balls to go around now. And yeah, if Bogdanovic and Gallo are just going to shoot the ball around Trae Young, like he chafed at not having enough help, but he also got to have the ball every single time, which was much to the chagrin of some of his teammates. But in his defense, his teammates couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
So now he has teammates who can do something, and they want to play him off the ball more potentially. Like, he's a great catch and shoot guy, but hasn't had a chance to get some of that game going. Are they going to install a more egalitarian system now? Are they going to do more like DHOs and swinging the ball from side to side, less pick and roll? What does that mean for John Collins, who's going to be out here trying to put up numbers to get his rookie extension? I mean, it seems impossible at this point that they could agree on a rookie extension, doesn't it?
I think so, yeah. I mean, it's still, the thing I'm wondering here is, are they going to trade John Collins for a 3-and-D wing, right? I think that's the question you have to be asking yourself, because you have Clint Capella there as your rim runner. You drafted Okongwu. And on the other hand, you still don't really have a starting 3 on this team. You know, maybe there's still an opening for Reddish or Hunter if they improve on their rookie year. But that I certainly don't think that's something you're banking on when you're kind of in a little bit of a win now mode. And even with that second group, I still think it's going to be, you know, it's going to be Bogdanović probably will play some with that second group and have the ball in his hands. And then it's going to be,
but they also have Rondo and Chris Dunn as well, right? Like that's, how many minutes is Rondo going to play? And Lloyd Pierce is on thin ice and Trey and Lloyd don't like each other. And they just brought in Nate McMillan, who most people would say is probably a better coach than Lloyd Pierce.
Yeah. Nate McMillan is unquestionably the interim coach in waiting there, right? I mean, like, I don't think there's any doubt about that.
Yeah, but Nate isn't, you know, one of the criticisms of him in Indiana was that he didn't kind of get down and dirty with the players from an emotional standpoint and kind of shepherd them through everything. So it seems like there is a lot of players stuffed into this box now, and guys are going to be unhappy. Collins, Chris Dunn could be a free agent. Is he going to play? He's got to kind of have the ball sometimes too, or he can't shoot at all. Rondo has always kind of made waves when he wasn't in a real winning situation, and he has to play, but he's also not going to be that good in the regular season. So
Gallo
should be starting over Collins, and he's not going to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, supposedly they told Gallo this straight away, so maybe that one's okay. So Rondo is the one that I was kind of troubled by, because there's only so many minutes behind Trae Young to begin with, and then you already have Chris Dunn. Like you actually don't have much shooting with that second group, and I just wondered if Shabazz Napier would have been a better fit there, and I'm sure he could have got him for the same money.
Oh yeah, they could have got him for the minimum apparently, because he's still out there.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I call him Shaz though. Are you okay with that, or is that Danny doesn't like when I do that?
I've never heard that one.
Yeah, like calling a Charlie Chaz, except it's Chaz.
I get it now. Okay. That's good. Okay.
But anyway, I mean, hey, like Tony Snell could be like their best option at the three at this point too, right? Given the way Hunter and Reddish.
I think Chris Dunn might end up starting at the three, because they need somebody on the perimeter to guard the best player on the other team.
Oh man, I think that would be shooting themselves in the foot to do that, particularly if they're not starting Gallo as well. I mean, granted, it'd be nice to have some defense, but I mean, to me, the theory of this team is we're going to be a top five offense in the league, and you know, if we can get up to number 20 defensively, just because we have Clint Capella, that's what we're going to have to try and do.
Mm-hmm.
Also, I think Bogdan is not too bad defensively. I think he's actually underrated. You and I might disagree on that, but. I think he's a passable option.
Who is the guy who's guarding Jason Tatum when they play Boston? You know, who is guarding the number one perimeter option on the other team? I mean, it's got to be Dunn, right? Or Reddish. I mean, if he can stop turning the ball over.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, and Reddish, you know, kind of the whole idea of him was that he can do more than just stand in the perimeter and shoot the ball as well. They got a lot of mouths to feed. And if this mix doesn't gel right away, Lloyd Pierce is going to be gone. I mean, I think that seems pretty clear to me.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of pressure on everyone there. I mean, they have a very, very open about, they've been very open about, you know, wanting to make the playoffs this year. And here we are. So it's going to be interesting. The Collins situation bears watching. What happens? Who's the fifth starter and how that works, I think, bears some watching. And then, you know, Hunter, like, if Hunter doesn't play, like, that's a situation, I guess. But he doesn't really have enough status in the league or enough accomplishments to be like making waves if he's not playing either, right?
So yeah, I think that's right, but it's still I mean, there don't seem like they don't have just like any end of the bench vets. I mean, maybe that's Solomon Hill who's gonna just be there and be like, hey, I'll talk to this guy who's upset, I know I'm not playing, I've been there before, young fellow, that kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, so let me ask you this, like, which of these moves would you have done and which would you have not done if you were Atlanta?
So when I look, the Rondo move is the one I clearly wouldn't have done. I thought Chris Dunn was a tremendous value. I think he's a fantastic defensive player. I think Gallinari and Bogdanović were kind of the two best players they could have realistically gotten, probably.
Yeah.
And so sometimes that outweighs the specific contract value.
And probably, frankly, better than anyone they could have gotten if they rolled their cap space over to next year, for example. Yeah. I mean, they got, like, not only did they get the two best players they could have gotten, I mean, that's probably, maybe two of the four best guys who realistically were going to change teams this offseason?
Yeah, probably. Yeah. I mean, if they weren't going to bring out the bag for Gordon Hayward, sure. Yeah. And I think I would rather have this combo than Hayward at 30 a pop. And then they didn't even get their asses kicked on the Gallo contract. You know, it's 2 guaranteed years and $5 million on the third. So if his injury stuff comes back, they have a bailout there. The Bogdanovich, they restricted free agent, you sort of have to sign a bad contract, but they had so much room. I mean, there was just for them to be competitive this year, like that was probably the right play, even with that being maybe a not great contract. So I would say the Rondo one is the one that bothers me. I think that you wanted to get somebody who brought you more shooting, more offense with that second group when Young is off the floor, and maybe fewer problems if he wasn't playing as much as he hoped.
Yeah, and someone who, you know, has been good at some point in the regular season in the last 5 years.
Well, that's the other thing. Like, you're paying for playoff Rondo, but your goal is to max regular season wins with this team. Now, they did give him a $750,000 playoff incentive, which might persuade him a little more to parlay some of those playoff Rondo nights into regular season Rondo. I guess that's a hope. But, I mean, and it's 2 guaranteed years for a player who's pretty long in the tooth, too. So that was the one, yeah, I really questioned.
I mean, I know they gave him $750,000, like whatever 15% times 7.5 million is what they should have gave him.
Yeah.
playoff post. I mean, it would have been unlikely. Like, why the hell not?
Yeah. 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 You're right. It counts. Yeah. It counts as an unlikely bonus as long as it's not the last guy they signed with their cap room, which he wasn't. And you're right. They could have gone from $750,000 to $1.075 million, I think, and added the full 15%.
Yeah. I mean, it's not that big of a difference, but whatever it was, I would have wanted to max it out. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, totally.
How about from the Kings' perspective? Would you have matched on Bogdanovich?
So I think one of the things you have to do in a front office is anticipate what all the other teams are going to do and really talk about what your potential responses are going to be. Because they went from turning him into Dante DiVincenzo, which would have been a very reasonable proposition, I think, especially when you talk about the salaries involved, to basically getting nothing for him at all. And I think you have to have enough of these conversations internally where it's not like, okay, we got the offer sheet now, what should we do? Like, you should already know what your plan of action is going to be, or what your walk away number is. And that way you can respond more proactively and generate sign and trades if you know this guy is going to get beyond the number that you think is fair. So the thing I always wondered about is that if they did match this, Atlanta was completely high and dry, and one of their few outs would have been trading for Buddy Hield. So basically,
well, I mean, they already have Herter, right? Like, is Buddy Hield really that much of an upgrade on Herter in the end, especially given Herter's youth?
Yeah, I kind of think.
I mean, Hield is such a bad contract. I heard that floated around. I just don't think that Atlanta would have done that.
Okay.
But I mean, I think any Hield contract is going to, and any Hield deal would have to involve like bad salary of a similar length going back. So maybe they really want to rehabilitate Hield. Who knows? Built Bar is the first protein bar that doesn't taste like it came from the inside of a sawmill. The bars are covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, and yet still low calorie, low sugar, high protein, high fiber. Great for a keto diet. For example, their peanut butter flavor, 19 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, 5 grams of net carbs. They've got cookies and cream, cherry barcia, coconut almond, and the old classics, peanut butter brownie, raspberry, German chocolate, double chocolate, orange, mint brownie. They really taste great. It's an awesome way to quell your hunger before a meal, get a quick jolt of protein right after you work out when you're on the go, and you can even get a free cooler with purchase while supplies last. Go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com.
Yeah, we'll see what happens in SAC now. I mean, they have more flexibility going forward. I don't know if, there's been a lot of talk that they'll sign Hassan Whiteside. I still think they need somebody who's like a real 2-3, someone who's kind of between Hield and Harrison Barnes on the positional spectrum. They drafted Robert Woodard in the second round, but he's really their only true small forward there. Justin James, I guess. But again, these are guys who aren't going to play, right? So they still have some work to do if they're actually trying to win this year.
Well, And that's actually the biggest reason why I wouldn't have matched in the end. I thought it was very close to me. A lot of people are saying you should have matched. You can't let the asset go. Look how much demand there was for him. They could have traded him. Number one, guys have the most value when teams have cap space and they can just sign them. And it's just funny money. And it's, we got to do something better.
Like yeah.
Throughout the course of the year, your market is going to narrow, right? If the Hawks were floundering and well under 500, maybe they're not interested in Bogdanovich all of a sudden, right? So, and who, I'm not sure who else was interested in Bogdanovich at that price, just to get, or maybe he just doesn't play as well, or the Kings themselves aren't doing that well. You know, when you know that you can trade the guy in the off season, that can go wrong if you re-sign the guy. You know, not all the time is it going to be we match and then we move the guy to the Nets a year later, like they did with that Allen Crabbe. But here's the kicker to me.
Mm-hmm.
The Sacramento Kings don't have enough talent on this roster in the long term. They got basically De'Aaron Fox and that's it right now. Huge question mark with Marvin Bagley and Hield is already, you know, 32 or whatever. So...
Is that the metric system?
Yeah. So everyone else in the West is trying to win this year. If you bring back Bogdanovich, you're probably going to be ahead of a bunch of these bad East teams. Again, this is a great draft. If you can kind of be like, okay, hey, we're not going to make the playoffs this year. Expectations are lower. You can also kind of rev up the tank a little bit earlier if you need to and get up there into the top seven or eight worst records and get a good draft pick and get that second guy. They need that second guy. There's no other way they're getting him except the draft. It kind of seemed like they were chasing the eighth seed, but the competition for that is now so fierce that if you can zag and go the same direction as Oklahoma City, I think you're in much better shape now with this supposedly awesome draft to get, and there's a bunch of wings in this draft too. That's what they so desperately have needed, is a good wing. I think that to me is the kicker of just they to be able to actually like get up there to the top of the draft. If they keep Bogdanovich, I think they're probably too good for that.
Yeah, so too good for that, and yet still not nearly good enough, right? So keeping him is the move that gets you from 28 wins to 33, right? So the soft tank is the better move. Play, you know, start playing out the games, maybe move on from Bielitsa at some point, maybe trade Rashawn Holmes at some point, and kind of try to get that guy for, you know, for the future going forward. See what you can do with those Hield and Barnes contracts, which are just total golden handcuffs right now. Not even golden. Well, golden for them, not so golden for the Kings. Golden one center handcuffs. How about that? That's probably the best way to play this hand.
Okay, next thing I want to talk about here is the somewhat surprising news that Bam Adebayo did in fact sign his rookie extension. It also has escalators to get up to 30% max if he makes All-NBA this year or Defensive Player of the Year. We had been told that the Heat were going to hold off on 2021 cap space being used. They cost themselves about $12-13 million in cap space, and now they in all likelihood wouldn't have room for a full max contract for Giannis Antetokounmpo next summer. So what's going on here?
Well, it's interesting because Adebayo and Giannis have the same agent. So you can read this one of two ways, right? You can read this as the agent, Alex Tsiratsis, told Miami that, look, Giannis is going to sign the Supermax with Milwaukee, so you might as well give my guy his max right now. And so the Heat did it. Or you could spin it the other way and say he told them, if you ever want a chance of my client playing for the Miami Heat, you better freaking give this other client of mine his max right now and not make him wait. So you can read that one of two ways. Certainly, the thing you really want to do if you're in the Bucks front office is wage a low-key media campaign to get Bam Adebayo named to an All-NBA team next year.
Oh, yeah. Well, okay. So this is a quote given to Barry Jackson, who's very plugged in with the Heat down in Miami. Or this isn't a quote. This is a quote from his story on the Adebayo extension.
Okay.
A source who knows Antetokounmpo well said he would be more impressed by the Heat giving Adebayo the extension now than asking Adebayo to wait a year for the purpose of making it easier for the Heat to acquire Antetokounmpo.
Mm-hmm.
New paragraph. Adebayo and Antetokounmpo are friends and share the same agent, Alex Tsiratsis. Katsas, in particular, when that's literally the next line of the article, I'm guessing that Tsiratsis might have been the source there. Just throwing that out there.
Yes, yes, yes. So it seems like, I mean, what Miami really set themselves up to do still is to trade for him rather than sign him outright. They have $50 million worth of player options for team options for next year. So it's one of those deals where if they know before free agency starts that they're getting him, they have the pieces to just do it via trade. And obviously they would have to throw a lot of cherries on top of that sundae. But that is the end game they were trying to set themselves up for with the deals they did this offseason. Now, obviously, they still have the flexibility that they gave themselves with those options to do if there's another deal that comes up in season, or if there's another player that comes available who maybe, you know, they don't have to go quite as far into cap room, but maybe, you know, a $25 million guy or something. They could probably get to that, it seems like. So they gave themselves a lot of optionality beyond Giannis, but they've also set themselves up where Giannis isn't completely out of play. It's harder, but it's not totally out of play yet.
So as of right now, I have them with $26 million in space. If the cap goes up more than anticipated, my projection right now is the minimum 3%. Mm-hmm. That's what the league's projection is as well. Giannis's max is 33.7. Now, if the cap goes up, Giannis's max also goes up, but only 30% as much as the cap does.
Yeah.
Now you could, and they may actually even have less space than that because Duncan Robinson and Kendrick Nunn will probably hit the starter criteria.
Yes.
And basically everything other than KZ Akpala's guaranteed $1.8 million is something you probably don't want to be getting rid of, right? You got Precious Achiuwa's salary as a rookie, Tyler Hero, Duncan Robinson, Kendrick Nunn, Jimmy Butler, Bam Adebayo's max. So there would be some pain if they got rid of some of those guys. Starting at $26 million, that's enough below the max that I'm like, I don't know if because it occurred to me, hey, what if he just does, you know, a 1+1? We've seen KD do that. We've seen LeBron do that. AD might do that this year. These absolute super duper stars who've changed teams in their prime at 26, 27, those guys feel very comfortable just taking a 1+1. They know even if they hurt themselves, they'll have the money again next year. So he could just do the first year, take a little less, get 120% raise and get a 4-year deal off of that the next year if he really wants to come there. And he's already taken less than the max in Milwaukee under somewhat similar circumstances. And, you know, LeBron and D-Wade and Chris Bosh did the same thing in Miami as well. And Miami certainly has a reputation for taking care of guys who take less to help out their flexibility. So I don't think it's crazy of all these guys like that he, you know, has to get the absolute max. You know, this is not late career LeBron who has something to prove every time he gets a contract that like, yeah, I have to get the most that I can for business reasons. Like Giannis, I think, doesn't necessarily care about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So as long... You raise a good point, because if they could get to basically 80% of what the 22-23 cap will be, then he's taking a haircut on the 1 year, but then he's basically signing a max after that. And I think once you factor out the state income tax, he might still come out the same. So that is a possibility that's still out there. I don't even know if they can get to 80% of his max. It's going to be tight, right?
Yeah, I mean, they may have to jigger some things around a little bit there. None and Akpala they can move on from with little pain. Hero, obviously. Oh, man, I mean, what a nasty team that would be, though, if they...
the other thing is, can you get close enough that you do a sign and trade with just $10 million in contracts? Mm-hmm. You know, can you get close enough
but even that, though, that $10 million is still Hero or
it's Adebayo Hero and Nunn is the problem,
or Duncan Robinson. Maybe Duncan Robinson would be in it. But this is what I want to ask you next. I mean, obviously Toronto still kept their space open. Dallas opened up even more space. I mean, the fact that Bam shares the same age as Giannis may have complicated things a little bit in Miami, but Bam really wanted to get paid. Very self-serving for Tsiratsis to put it out there like, oh yeah, by the way, Giannis will really consider it more if you pay this other client of mine. right? That's fantastic. So who knows whether that's really true or not. But what's your feeling now with the Holiday trade, the Bucks giving up 3 first round picks, 2 of them their own unprotected, 2 unprotected pick swaps to get Jrue Holiday, but then the Bogdanović thing falls through? I mean, there's some of these things where you're like, okay, yeah, he's definitely taking the Supermax. Like, clearly Milwaukee wouldn't do this deal for Jrue Holiday with all these totally unprotected picks, like literally unprotected, right? I mean,
yeah,
which they kind of had to do just because to fit in all of these deals or all of these picks, because they had other picks out in the future as well, and they needed time for them all to convey and make them unprotected. But you can say they would never have done that if they didn't know the Supermax was coming.
Yeah,
but I don't know if he's gonna sign it still. What do you think the odds are he signs it at the point? From the makers of Built Bar comes Built Go, combining energy gel with collagen protein, which is fast absorbing plus easy on the stomach. They've also got beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine to help you concentrate and get going. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's like 5-hour energy without the same crash, and it comes in 3 delicious flavors, chocolate mint, chocolate coconut, and peanut butter honey. Visit BuiltGo.com and use the promo code LOCKED, and you'll get 20% off your next order. Use promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go.
So people who are plugged in will tell you they still think there's really good chance he does sign it. But these other 3 teams, their actions tell you that they think there's a good chance he will not sign it. Because at the end of the day, I don't think teams are making all these moves for Victor Oladipo, right? They're doing it to make a run at Giannis. I know there's other good free agents out there. There's Rudy Gobert. There's a couple other guys. But like Giannis is the guy you do stuff like this for. I mean, Miami went to the finals last year, and rather than being all in for this year, they basically kept all their options open to get Giannis, right? So that's the thing that you only do if you think there's a decent chance and you think that player has a chance to make a huge impact for your team, which obviously Giannis would. So, and I wrote about that in my story for The Athletic yesterday, that, you know, this was such an unusual free agent market because the player who dominated the market in some respects was not a free agent this year. But you had 4 different teams, basically, if you include the Knicks, set up their entire free agency plan around the idea of Giannis next year.
Yeah, I noted that it would be amazing 4-dimensional chess if Giannis just waited to sign the Supermax until Miami and Toronto forewent these opportunities in 2020, and then they just signed it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Like just because that's their competition in the East. But
yeah, it would be like Kawhi last year was sweating out the Lakers, right?
Yeah. Well, that didn't end up working. No. So yeah, I don't know. It just, this Bogdanović thing was such a screw up, and it was so incompetent that I certainly would advise him not to sign it. We'll put it that way. Like, there's no reason to sign it. Like, he's gonna get paid. He can still sign that same contract next year.
That's the thing that I mean, logically, he can sign the same contract after the season. So why would you do it now when you can wait and see how things play out? Maybe there's an injury, maybe there's a trade, maybe there's some other team he decides he wants to play for that isn't one of these teams. So he's going to have a lot of power next offseason if he doesn't give it away too quickly, basically. So and I just think in his situation, you know, if you're like these other players who signed extensions, it was smart business for them because maybe they get injured or whatever and it's life-changing money. But Giannis is already at the end of his first max contract, and almost no matter what happens to him this year, he's getting another one, right? So I think in his case, you wait until after the year, and that's the more logical way to play his hand.
Yeah, and if there were something truly catastrophic where he just couldn't even play again at all, I'm sure he has insurance for that as well. So yeah, and the maybe one thing that's been posited was that the Bucks would say to him, hey, sign the Supermax now, and if you're not happy later, we'll trade you. And that is something that could happen. What do you make of that argument?
I could see that conversation happening. Yes. And you know, it would have to be something, you know, it'd be a little bit of a heart to heart with the owners, I guess. But I definitely could see that conversation. That actually seems somewhat realistic to me.
Yeah. It also just seems like, is Giannis really the guy who cares that much about getting the Supermax now? Like, does he even care about having, you know, another $40 million when he already already have $250 million. You know, probably yeah. not. Doesn't seem like that kind of guy to me. Doesn't seem like the kind of guy who wants his ego to be the highest paid player in basketball. I don't think he cares about that kind of stuff. So this idea of like, well, you can lock in, you get your money now, and you could still get traded to your destination later. And he can always, I mean, he's going to be 28 when he's eligible for the 10 plus year max, and he can get a 4 or 5 year deal of the 35% max then anyway. Like, it's only a couple of years worth of getting 35 instead of 30 for a yes. guy like him. Ironically, the guys who it's really going to matter for are your Russell Westbrooks and your John Wall, where you're like, yeah, you know what? I guess I wouldn't be able to get that money later, so I better lock in now before they realize that, like, I'm going downhill.
Yeah, absolutely.
What else do you want to talk about from this free agency?
What do you think of the Pelicans?
So Danny and I did our offseason grades for them yesterday and struggled with them quite a bit, because the Jrue Holiday trade was an absolute masterstroke, particularly now that Bogdanović has fallen through. And even I would say that even if Giannis re-signs, you know, Jrue Holiday is 31, Brooke Lopez is older,
Middleton.
Chris Middleton is older. Like, this team, and they're so locked in, they don't have any other assets to improve now. Yeah, okay, hey, maybe you even get Giannis to stay, but like, are you a championship contender 2 years from now? I don't think you are, unless there's some major move that we don't see coming that happens.
Two of these picks are at the end of his next contract.
Right. And they're unprotected. So yeah. This really, like, getting that kind of an upside, you know, we're not talking about the LA Lakers here. Like, if Giannis leaves, they're going to be bad. And they might try to get, you know, get up to being the 10th seed or something like that. Also, just because of the new lottery rules, even if they're finishing, you know, with the 9th worst record every year, one of those years could very easily end up
go jackpot.
And they've got 4 unprotected years of mm-hmm. controlling Milwaukee's draft. I mean, that is awesome, right? That's absolute A-plus possible return from Jrue Holiday. They had the commitment to move him. They didn't try to keep him around and chase the A seed this year, or I guess now the 10th seed with mm-hmm. the play-in. Playing in the West can be fun, by the way, as a quick aside. But
yes.
So that part is awesome. And then I thought the Steven Adams thing was absolutely asinine.
I completely agree. Why are you giving up a first and 2 seconds for almost any five in the NBA? B, you're playing this guy next to Zion? Like, you already have no shooting. And the marginal difference between him and Favors and the contract Favors signed, like, I don't get it. I just don't get it at all.
Favors might be better than him. Now, Adams is healthier, but like, mm-hmm. Favors to me is better defensively than Steven Adams.
And then why didn't they put Melly in the deal and get rid of some of these cap handcuffs they left themselves with? That was the other part that was bizarre to me.
Yeah, I think when you consider all the extra stuff that they had to do, where it was OKC had to pay his trade bonus, because if you decline a trade bonus, then you can't extend in trade. And then they also have to now pay a guaranteed salary for Cheatham and Kendrick Williams, who actually might stick there, and Josh Gray. You know, you have to get OKC to do all this financial stuff. That's some of probably of the compensation that mm-hmm. they ended up having to pay to them. But I think there's two things that I thought really were bad about this, or I guess three things. Number one is the price that they paid. Four things.
Okay. All right.
Number one is the price they paid in the trade. Mm-hmm. Number two is the price that they're going to be paying Steven Adams. They now are out of the cap space derby basically for next year. You know, they could have even potentially extended Lonzo and still had room to get another starter. They still need another good wing on this team. Yeah. And then I think they got the player wrong, because I think Steven Adams is way overrated, and I think he's slipped a lot. Like, he's just got a lot of mileage on him, even though he's a little bit younger.
Yep.
And then number four, the fit with Zion is terrible.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah.
Like, do you think that Steven Adams is this, like, great defensive player?
No, he's okay. Like, he's an okay, you know, starting center. But yeah, I just didn't think there was any reason. Like, certainly he's overpaid for what he is. So when you're giving up a first and 2 seconds to get a guy who's a negative salary and doesn't really fit with the building block for your team for the next, you know, however many years.
Oh, and they gave up George Hill too. George Hill was like a top 3 6 man of the year for me last year. Like, Like, I think George Hill is better than Steven Adams, and he's paid less. He's older, but still.
Yeah, yeah. They should have kept George Hill. They should have traded Reddick because he's on the final year of his deal, and they would have gotten stuff for him. And they could have kept George Hill if they wanted to be, you know, if they were really trying to be competent this year. Instead, Oklahoma City's going to move on from George Hill, I'm sure, and get draft picks coming and going just like they did on these other deals. I didn't get that part at all. If they had put Reddick or Bledsoe in this deal, it would have been a lot less convoluted too. Because now you're playing Ball and Bledsoe together with Williamson and Adams. Is that your starting five around Brandon Ingram? Is your only guy in the starting lineup who can shoot?
Yeah, Ball is a little bit better, but yeah, that doesn't seem too great to me either. I mean, on Reddick, if they couldn't get a first for him, then I understand keeping him around for like the leadership stuff and because they desperately need some shooting and he's a Stan Van Gundy guy. But if there was a first out there, yeah, absolutely. They should have moved him. So here's another thing too. And we can use this transition into another topic, but remember when you drafted your center of the future last year at number 8?
Yeah. A lot of changes of direction here with teams who picked in the lottery a year ago.
Just to finish up with New Orleans first, like they drafted a guy in Jackson Hayes who doesn't fit with Zion either. He was terrible last year. They obviously don't believe in him because they just signed a starter over his head at big money for the next 3 years.
Yep.
And so that's like kind of a waste. But like that was one of those ones where it's like, this didn't make sense to begin with to get this guy at number 8 who can't shoot, who's going to play next to Zion and is also incredibly raw. I just like that was a decision that never made sense in the beginning, and now after a year of Jackson Hayes, they certainly have come to the conclusion that he is not going to be good enough anytime soon. But yeah, then the rest of this 2019 top 10 teams are giving up on them already too, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we talked about Atlanta with Hunter and Reddish, where I do legitimately think like Hunter may end up just not playing much at all. We'll see how this all shakes out there.
Yeah, they traded so much to get that guy too.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That was the trade with New Orleans. Yeah. They took on a bad contract and they gave up a future first, I think, to move up a few spots.
So it was 8-17, a future Cleveland first that was going to convert into 2 seconds, 2 Cleveland seconds. That's pretty damn good.
Yeah.
And then it was also the pick that became Didi.
It's 35, right? It was 8-17 and 35. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's
and
rough.
They had to take on Solomon Hill. $13 million of dead money from last year.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. Yeah, for a guy who's going to be maybe their 11th player this year. Again, we'll see, but it's not looking real good. But I mean, you see it with these other teams too, though. I mean, Jared Culver's name is coming up in trade talks already. I'm trying to think these. You know, I struggle to remember the names of some of these players. They did so little in the season.
Well, so I mean, maybe you could put Rui Hachimura in that category as well. They just drafted another guy at the same position.
Yeah, they drafted over the top of him, and they paid paid Bertans, who was theoretically his backup last year, $80 million. So if they're legitimately trying to win with Wall and Beal back this year, I don't see how they can start Hachimura again.
No, honestly, I think as much as you weren't a fan of Avdija, I think Avdija is going to be better than Rui Hachimura this year because he at least has some feel and some defensive versatility. Their shooting is probably about the same, I'm guessing.
Yeah. Yeah,
but we'll get a good idea of that in preseason.
Not a really high bar there, but yeah, I'll go ahead and agree with you there.
By the way, are you excited for the most important preseason ever?
The most important preseason ever?
Yeah.
Why is that?
Like actual like preseason game.
Oh, I see. Like just to see actual. Yeah, that'll be fun. That'll be fun, especially
like
summer
league. Yeah. So we have like all these rookies. We have no idea how they're going to look. You've also got 3 games basically for these teams to like gel and get back in shape before the season starts. Like this is gonna actually, I'm gonna be watching as much preseason as I can. Hook it up to my veins, John.
Yeah, no, it's like the the scrimmage games in the bubble, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Will the Nuggets start 5 centers again in one of these preseason games? Please, can we get that?
Oh man. So there's him. And then, what they said in New York was that they wanted to build around RJ Barrett better than they did last year with this new regime. And I don't think they're really doing that.
No, not at all. No.
Do you think that's an indication that the new regime doesn't believe in RJ Barrett, or just an indication that they don't know what they're doing?
I think it's probably a mixture of the latter, and that just managing the cap stuff was the bigger priority for them, and they're just not that worried about this year in general. But
it's so weird to me, like, you know, Damian Dotson, to me, they just let him go.
Yeah,
and he would have been a better fit than like Alec Burks or somebody,
or Austin Rivers. Exactly. Yeah. These guys who need the ball in their hands, and you really want guys who don't need ink and space off him. Like, I thought that Dotson acquisition, as low level as it was a good move by Cleveland to have him play with Colin Sexton, because you know if you can't play somebody who also needs the ball with Sexton, right? So yep. You know, Dotson's going to play the space the floor and play defense and you know, probably be able to fill that role a little better.
Let's talk about Charlotte, Gordon Hayward.
Yeah.
We got probably like 10-15 minutes left here.
Yeah. Severe overpay, obviously, and I thought they needed at least one more year of taking their medicine and doing the hoarding draft picks, using their space, doing more of what Oklahoma City is doing before they really got back in the business of trying to go nuts on winning right now. But that's always been Charlotte's MO, right? Can we just please get the 8th seed? And I think because of that,
the 10th seed now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the playing game is leading to more excitement now in the NBA.
Yes. And I still don't think they're good enough to get there. I think they spent all this money to win 30 games instead of 25. So I have a hard time getting excited about this or getting on board with the reasoning. Was really excited to see what LaMelo Ball can do there. And the one part I sort of understand is, like, now you have somebody who can be sort of the offensive fulcrum and let Ball more evolve into what he's going to be, rather than have to be the man from day one.
They can at least hold Ball accountable to some degree now, which he just has never had in his life. But he's also a guy who needs some rope.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But maybe totally. You give him that rope in 25 minutes a game instead of 30.
Yeah. Now, if this contract also, he's also playing for their esports team, I think it might make more sense.
Oh, man. So we'll see what happens. We don't know whether there's going to be the Batum stretch or they're going to move him. I would recommend that if you must do this, mm-hmm. please stretch him. Don't give up assets. Like, don't give up
a first round pick
to do this as well.
Exactly.
The whole reason this Hayward thing is happening supposedly is that their cap space isn't valuable. So now you're going to prioritize future cap space and give up a draft pick instead. Like, that's the exact opposite of what you should be doing in a small market.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, if you look, they're at $31 million in room next year right now. So, and that's with Batum's stretch on the books. So I just don't see what the urgency would be to do a deal there. The only thing I would say, is there a contract they can trade for where, I don't know, somebody who has debtor money at $23 million, you make the trade and then you stretch that contract. I'm trying to think of what contracts are like.
Let me ask you this: Would you consider doing Batum for Buddy Hield?
Oh, if you you can't, because you still have to stretch the contract to fit Hayward, unless you're going to trade Cody Zeller. You'd have to do like Batum and Zeller for Hield and like somebody who makes $8 million, I think.
Yeah, well, I think you could get there because Batum, Hield makes like, I don't know, I think his cap number would be like 22 or something after he missed his bonuses. And they were, to start off, Hayward's going to make 27.9. You know, if you moved off of one more guy, like Malik Monk or something, if you could move off of Malik Monk in a separate deal, then you probably could get there as well. But anyway, that's probably too speculative right now. But
That would be an interesting one. Yeah, That's actually an interesting trade.
Yeah, because then after that, like, Buddy, he'll have 3 years left at around 20. But like, and I see, like, Buddy to me makes sense in Charlotte because then, you know, you just got good shooting, spread pick and roll, help LaMelo develop.
Yeah. Plus that Buddy Ball marketing slogan would be good.
But yeah, the idea of bad teams stretching guys, we saw it in Detroit too. Like the whole idea of stretching is the present is more important than the future. We have something that's so game breaking by right now, and we can become a contender by doing this, right? You stretch Ryan Anderson so you can do the Jimmy Butler sign and trade. That's when you stretch.
Yeah.
To stretch when you're already bad, it just doesn't make any sense to me. Like these moves aren't putting them over the top for anything, with Detroit being the other one.
Yeah, you like these Detroit moves, huh?
Well, this is the way I'm kind of thinking about it, actually. If they had just not signed Plumlee, then they wouldn't have needed to do the Dedmon stretch. By the way, Dwayne Dedmon might just be better than Mason Plumlee. Like, they could have just traded Tony Snell for Dwayne Dedmon and had Dwayne Dedmon be a center this year. He spaces the floor.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, he can let Blake Griffin go in and kind of bully ball a little bit.
And let Killian Hayes do whatever he's doing. Yeah, sure.
And they still could have given Grant the same contract. And they even, at that point, they might have you could also have potentially retained Christian Wood and signed Jeremy Grant as well. You know, they probably would have had, because they started off with $30 million in space. They didn't really need to do this Ariza deal either. Like, that was pretty ugly to vaporize $12 million in space for Ariza. They did turn him into Wright, who I think can play for them a little bit. But letting Wood go is weird. What do you think is up with the Pistons? Like, do you think they just never made Wood an offer? Do you think the new regime just didn't like him? Like, what do you think the story was there? They didn't trade him at the deadline. Yeah. Like, you sure as fuck should have traded him at the deadline if you weren't going to give him a good offer.
Well, I mean, that was I don't think the new regime was in place yet at the trade deadline, if I remember right.
No, obviously they weren't. But
I think the mentality was to keep him. I mean, he was their best. They gave up their three best young players. I mean, between Bruce Brown, Luke Kennard, and Christian Wood, right? Like, between this whole like convoluted Rube Goldberg scheme to stretch guys and trade draft picks and do this and that and trade for guys who were more stretchable, like they gave up their three best young players so they could build a team around the Nuggets backup front court from a year ago. I just don't get that. It's just such a weird kind of mess of everything they did. Yeah, I don't think they ever prioritized keeping Christian Wood. And, you know, Houston was able to get a pretty good deal out of it. They gave up basically a second round pick to put Christian Wood, and they changed a little bit of the protections on the first round pick that they were already getting to turn the Ariza trade into a sign and trade for Christian Wood. So I thought that worked out really well for the Rockets, and I just thought that was a giveaway by Detroit, especially when you look at what they ended up with instead. It was just so unnecessary.
I mean, they're not good next year, right? Are we clear on that, or do you disagree?
No, I mean, can they get to the eighth seed if Blake Griffin comes back and plays the way he did? Was it 2 years ago?
Right.
And that's the absolute ceiling. So they should be looking to trade Derrick Rose, I would think. Let Killian Hayes take his lumps this year, see what you have with him. Instead, I think it's going to be more, you know, Jeremy Grant trying to be the man on a bad team, and it's going to be pretty ugly.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, Blake Griffin and Derrick Rose are probably still their two best offensive players even now, but they're obviously both big time injury and performance risks. And again, this is another team that's kind of taking themselves out of the top of the 2020 draft or 2021 draft for no point, really. I mean, this is again. And Troy Weaver, I mean, is this the Tom Gores, Chase the AC? Because usually when a guy comes in at the beginning, he's got a little bit of a mandate where he can kind of rebuild a little bit. I mean, even Monty McNair is getting that for Vivek right now. And it seems like either Weaver was like, no, we got to get good as fast as possible. Yeah. Or he was told to do so by Tom Gores, who is a Chase the AC kind of guy.
Yeah, I don't think that's quite all there is. I mean, because if it was all in on chasing the eighth seed, I don't think they do that Kennard trade, which was just, I mean, that to me was just the weirdest part of the whole thing. To throw in four future seconds to turn Kennard into the 19th pick, okay, that's fair. But then, like, throw in the 4 seconds just so you can get Roddy Magruder's more stretchable contract, which you ended up not even needed to stretch. Like, come on, guys.
The four seconds was, I mean, I don't think we knew about those 4 seconds when you and I were talking about this.
No, because it wasn't announced until it came out in the press release. And everyone's like, wait, what the hell? We gave up 4 seconds too?
What's the process behind that of like why some things don't come out until the press release, but others do? Is that intentional by Detroit to just be like, hey, Clippers, if we're going to do this, you got to make sure that it doesn't get out that gave you all these seconds when it's initially reported? Because that does just stick in people's minds of whatever it is when it was initially reported.
Yeah, exactly. So teams will leak things out in a more favorable way. They virtually will never leak out if there's cash in a deal and you only find that out later. Sometimes.
Well, there is one exception to that.
Yes. Good point. The
$4.6 million that Houston supposedly spent to get a 2021 Lakers pick that became number 52. Yeah, that's what the money was for. Best value signings, just a couple off the top of your head there.
Chris Dunn, I think defense always costs less in the market than offense for whatever reason. And I think he's a perfect example. I think he's one of the best defensive players in the league. I think he's going to help Atlanta a lot, even if he doesn't totally fit defensively. I think whoever signs Shaquille Harrison, I think, is one of the best value deals. We'll see what kind of money he gets. I'm trying to, this is all such a whirlwind. I like the Bazemore deal in Golden State. I thought he was actually pretty good once he got to Sacramento last year. He's, even if he's bad, everyone loves having him around. So I thought that was just kind of a good arrangement all around. I like the Grizzlies deals for Melton and Conchar.
Yeah. Yeah. That, I mean, Melton, your system had Melton valued at like $15 million a year.
Yeah. He's still so young that there's still a lot of capacity for him to get better. So if he improves as a shooter in particular, then I think you have a starting two, a pretty good starting two on a pretty good deal, right, going forward as he goes into his mid-20s. So yeah, I'm a big fan of that. Trying to think what else. Phoenix, I thought, with Jay Crowder, the value was like, okay, pretty decent, but the fit was awesome, right? That was exactly the guy they needed.
Yeah. Mine would be Derek Jones Jr. On a 2-year deal. I thought he should have gotten like a 4-year deal for the full mid-level. I thought that was really good for Portland. I don't know whether he's going to start for them or not, but he is like a lockdown defensive player, and he's not a good shooter. But I mean, the only concern I have is like I would have liked his fit much more in, say, Dallas, somewhere that has a stretch five, which Portland doesn't really have. But
yeah,
I thought that to me is really solid value, to be sure. Drew Eubanks, like some of these guys who came off of two ways.
Yeah.
Like Drew Eubanks, I guess that's just going to be 3 years at the minimum.
Conchar, yeah, it's a 3-year minimum for Eubanks with the last 2 years non-guaranteed. So that's a good deal. Pirtle was a good deal. He got less than the mid-level. Like if you're New Orleans, like what? Why don't you drop a sheet on him instead of doing that Adams deal?
Yeah, yeah, but yeah, and by the way, New Orleans also has like took themselves out of the mid-level exception this year with the Adams deal as well.
Yeah, just all minimums. Yeah, yeah, really.
So
really,
obviously the Lakers guys, Wes Matthews and Marc Gasol. I mean, those are both excellent value.
Yeah, I mean, I like those better than the Harrell deal. Certainly, the value was fine to give him the mid-level, but he doesn't fit there. Like, is Trez ever closing a playoff game with that team?
No, I thought that was one of the worst. Like, the opportunity cost of that signing, they recovered because they did so well with Gasol and Matthews.
Yeah.
But yeah, I hated that. And that seemed like kind of a clutch favor to me.
Maybe. I mean, Gasol... It seemed like that might be one where he's getting paid 2 years to play one.
Yeah, that's a possibility that he just retires and then they waive him.
Yeah, yeah.
That's interesting. That hadn't occurred to me, but that makes perfect sense.
It's the Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, deal. Yeah. Yeah.
Langston Galloway in Phoenix, I thought was really good. Really nice fit next to Devin Booker. Cheap.
Yep.
Shoots the ball, defends. I mean, he's the exact guy you want next to Devin Booker on their second unit. If Cam Payne can't repeat what he did in the bubble, then you can throw Galloway in there and get some good minutes from him and just let Booker be the primary ball handler in the second unit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Galloway and Etuan Moore, both. They got Carter and Saric back on pretty good deals. I mean, other than that Damian Jones signing, I thought they had a pretty good offseason. And the Jalen Smith, I'm sorry. Anything they did that didn't involve centers, I thought turned out really well for them.
What about ones that you really didn't care for?
Okay, Damian Jones was not an NBA player last year. Like, I watched the Hawks in person like 20 times. Like, what was that? Like, even at a minimum, like a 2-year minimum deal? Like, what are we doing here? Sorry, I just had that one top of mind.
Yeah.
So that one was definitely yuck. Jeremy Grant, obviously. I thought he was playoff guy, you know, who gets wildly overrated because his team makes a run in the playoffs and he's like their fourth best player, if that. And I thought that was a gross overpay by Detroit. Your favorite player, Mason Plumlee, did not like that contract.
Yeah.
I thought in general teams were really going overboard to pay a lot of centers who are going to be watching playoff games from the bench, right? Like, what was Utah doing bringing Derek from their Favors house, back?
One of the two.
What was the deal with bringing Favors back? Like, you already know this doesn't work, right?
Well, okay. So I think there's a couple of reasons for that.
Okay.
Number one, he's insurance if Rudy Gobert leaves.
Yeah, I guess. But I mean, that's a year from now. And like, you know, there's going to be other players on the,
So I think there's more to it as well. Like, they needed a better backup center. He wanted to come back. He was happy with the role. You know, I think there wasn't anyone else on the market, I think, that they were going to be comfortable with in that role. So they at least got someone, and now you can play Rudy Gobert 30 minutes a game this year. You don't have to overextend him during the regular season instead of him having to play 36 minutes a game. And their bench, which was a big liability last year, can become a strength. They do get the insurance for next year. And what else would you have recommended they use their mid-level on, right? I mean, if you
were going to bring the band back together, I would have done it on Jay Crowder. I thought they needed a big wing who could shoot. I thought that was a much more pressing need than getting another center. Yeah.
Well, Jay Crowder may not have been interested in going there too. I mean, he did possible. Get 3 years, right? I mean, we do fall into this mistake sometimes of like, hey, why didn't you just offer this guy one more dollar than he got somewhere else and he would have come there, right? Like, sometimes it doesn't necessarily work that way, but
that's true.
I think it just not knowing who else was out there for them. Like, one of the things that came to mind for us when we did our mock off season a couple of weeks ago was, yeah, you know what? There's no money out there. And so everyone's like, this is going to be a really rough market for free agents. But even with no money out there, when you looked at all of the mid-levels that were available, there actually were more slots than there were good players. Like, we rapidly got to the point where I was like, man, there isn't anyone I would want to give a contract for more than 1 year at the mid-level to that's left, and a ton of teams who still had that available. Mm-hmm. So I think to even get, you know, I think Favors could be tradable on that contract as well, as long as he doesn't get hurt again. So I was fine with that. Like, Danny was more on your point of view that they probably, but again, I think as long as the owner is willing to pay for it, like, and now they have a very, very solid 8-man rotation. I think depth this season is gonna be more important than ever, keeping guys fresh for the playoffs. So I was fine with that. I mean, I think just in a vacuum, the player in contract is good. Yes, he's a little bit of a luxury when you have Gobert, but then there's the insurance aspect. If Gobert leaves, they won't probably be able to get someone as good as Favors next year for the mid-level. I was okay. I thought it was all right. I see the other view for sure, but I don't think the opportunity cost was very high for them in the end.
Okay. I guess, you know, if they hadn't also used their first on a behemoth center, I might be a little softer on them on this. It just seemed like a very 1990s approach.
Yeah, maybe so. And then maybe Favors is the starter and Udoka is the backup next year if Gobert leaves. But we'll see. I mean, these moves did kind of seem to augur that they think that they'll get something with him. But I'm thinking, if Rudy Gobert is seeing Gordon Hayward get $120 million guaranteed, my price just went way up.
That was an unfortunate contract from the Utah Jazz's perspective, certainly. Yeah, can't argue
let's
that.
Let's see if there were any others that I thought were really weird.
Oh, while we're on Utah, what did you think of Mitchell's extension?
Well, I mean, they gave him absolutely everything. 15% yeah. trade kicker, 30% max, I think, even just if he only makes a third team All-NBA. Correct me if I'm wrong on that part.
Yeah, then, that's correct.
And then the player option, which was, and that may have then led to Jason Tatum getting the player option as well. But man, I mean, if I'm Memphis with Ja Morant or New Orleans with Zion Williamson, I am cursing the Utah Jazz right now for giving Donovan Mitchell that player option.
Yeah, totally. I mean, and when you're in a market like that, I mean, retaining rights to players is everything. And so that you got to hold the line on that player option. You've given him everything else, right? He's not getting a better deal anywhere else.
No, and perhaps it was the fact that the deadline is so much closer than it would normally be on July 1st. Like, normally you could make him wait for 3 months like they did with Karl-Anthony Towns, and who ended up not getting the player option. He was a much better player at the time than Donovan Mitchell. Yeah. And nobody cares because it's the middle of August and everyone's on vacation. Now, though, you know, you bring him into training camp and he's already not under contract and the questions start. You know, training camp starts in like a week. So maybe that's why there was a little bit more pressure to get something done now. But I think this could also just be the Ryan Smith over exuberant. Yes, like these are the same guys I've been fans of for a long time. Give them whatever they want. I'm going to be the cool owner.
Yeah. Yep. And, I can
and
see that.
The point of being the cool owner is then you get guys to commit there.
Right. Right. Well, Utah will now be a free agent destination because they gave Donovan Mitchell a player option.
Yeah. No, I mean, that's one thing that is just, and Jason Tatum getting one too. That's, you know, if you think about all the players who changed teams in the last 2 to 3 years and how many of them did so because they got a player option on their second contract, you see how much this shit mattered.
Yeah, exactly. Because it's not just the player option year, it starts the clock on everything sooner in terms of guys pushing their way out and the leverage they have and whatnot.
Yeah. All right. Well, this is fun, man. You have a happy Thanksgiving. And for everyone, we'll be back at our normal time. We'll do the Twitch stream as well. That's at 2:30 Eastern, 11:30 Pacific on Thursday. So John and I will talk to you all then. Thanks so much for joining us and happy Thanksgiving.